went to see my physician. He said, you're definitely ill. Then said the nurse, I've seen worse, so the doctor just gave me a pill. Take one of those three times a day, don't ever stop until you're nearly dead or almost better. Keep out of the reach of children. The thing is, there might be some side effects. You mean there probably will. Well, if it's a fact, just come back and I'll give you another pill. On top of that, 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 on top of that. And then he showed me his bill. I popped another pill.
Welcome to When Your Health Matters. Your host is Dr. Richard Hantoon of Advanced Alternative Medicine Center, located right here in the Hudson Valley in Newburgh. Dr. Hantoon has been practicing alternative health, utilizing chiropractic and many other alternative health techniques for the past 27 years to support you when your health matters. It's his intention to offer practical advice every week for you to consider and apply in your own life to make your life and the lives of your family and friends healthier and happier. And when you have questions, he'll give you resources to get your health-related questions answered from Doc Rick himself or another expert from the show. Being empowered to make positive health choices before a problem arises is the best way to approach health. And he promises to have information for you every week that will allow you to become proactive and empowered to take control of your health and your life. Doc Rick is grateful you're tuned in today, and your journey will begin after our first commercial break from our generous sponsor.
You are listening to the Alternative Healthcare Network.
I'm here with Bruce Bagan of B&B Pool and Spa Center. We're talking about making home pools and spas green.
As always, it's great speaking with you, Jimmy.
You are the exclusive pool builder that offers the IntelliPool and IntelliSpa.
Jimmy, green is about more than just energy. It's about safety and cleanliness as well.
What makes up an Intelli system?
As far as what's green, it includes a programmable IntelliFlow pump with its built-in shutoff feature that meets New York and New Jersey's requirements for new pools. We use heat pumps that reduce heating costs. We offer solar heating as well. For those people who wish to reduce or eliminate chemicals in the pool, we can install a system that makes their water virtually chemical-free.
Thanks for informing our listeners, Bruce. If you need to contact a pool professional about your pool, call B&B Pool and Spa Center, 787 Chestnut Ridge Road in Chestnut Ridge, and on the web at bbpoolandspa.com, or call 800-594-2137. That's bbpoolandspa.com, 800-594-2137.
You are listening to the Alternative Healthcare Network.
Welcome to this week's show, When Your Health Matters, the show designed to empower you to better health through knowledge and education. And I'm your host, Dr. Richard Hantoon from Advanced Alternative Medicine Center. We are located at 138 Canal Street in Pooler Park. That is in Pooler, Georgia. We're in Suite 404 of Building 400. And I'm here with you each week to share some information I feel is important for your health, the health of your family and friends. And when you have concerns, I'll ask you to go to thealternativehealthcarenetwork.com. You can listen to any of our radio shows for the last, 14 years. We've been in three major markets over the last 14 years, and every podcast we've ever recorded is available from that site, thealternativehealthcarenetwork.com. If you want to get a hold of me, the best way to do that would be to call my cell phone. That is the little contraption that I carry with me everywhere I go. That's a cell phone number is area code 845-561-2225. Again, 845-561-2225. You should put that in your cell phone, and anytime you have a health-related question, you should call it, and I'm happy to answer that question. If you want to email me, please email me. Do not text me because my phone does not receive texts, but you can email me directly at docrick, D-O-C-R-I-C-K, docrick at spineboy.com. Again, docrick at spineboy.com. Email me. Again, you can call me. Go to my main website, which is spineboy.com. It's a wealth of information. It's over 250 pages of distinct medical conditions, which will go over what the condition is about, the medical perspective, the alternative perspective. Will give you recommendations on how to restore your health regarding that particular condition that you have. Give free healthcare classes. We have this radio show. We have audio tapes that people can purchase. Whatever it takes in order for you to be healthy, this show is called When Your Health Matters. You get to decide when your health matters. Hopefully it matters before you develop full-blown disease. Even though that's the only time that medicine will be able to treat you is when you have full-blown disease, I'd just assume make sure that you never get disease and that you end up being healthy. And so one of the things that we want to talk about today is we want to talk about how you start somebody off to be healthy and start them right out of the womb or even before they're even in the womb on how they're going to end up being healthy. And the man that's behind the scenes, the man that's going to ask the questions, whose topic this is going to be, his name is Mark Sabin. He's in studio with me. He's a parent extraordinaire. He's a marketer extraordinaire. He's an interfaith minister. He's the man that was the officiant at my wedding. He's a close personal friend. He's a confidant. He's somebody that I can talk to openly about stuff because that's the kind of relationship that we have, and I appreciate him being in my life, and we want to say welcome, Mark, and welcome to When Your Health Matters.
Well, thanks so much for that very kind introduction, Doc Rick. You know, I do want to talk to you about the health of children and you know, before people are born. And one of the things that really sort of intrigues me about this, because I know that you have approached healthcare in part from a Chinese medical, traditional Chinese medical perspective. And in Chinese medicine, there are basically two types of the energy that is really at the source of your humanity. And they call that qi. And that gives you energy, but there's the prenatal qi that comes from before you were born, and then there is what's called postnatal qi, the qi or energy that you nurture after you leave the womb. So can you describe really what that word qi means?
Well, as we've already touched on, qi means energy, and it's the referencing the energy that we are born with to help sustain the vitality and longevity of a person who was born. Obviously, we all have energy and we're energetic beings. The traditional Chinese theory of health postulates the energy we are born with needs nurturing to sustain it. And if you abuse yourself and you lead a destructive lifestyle, your vital qi, the energy that you were born with, will be diminished and the longevity of that particular person will decrease over time because it's like you're burning through your energy too fast. It's kind of like in a car. If you drive faster than the speed limit, you're going to blow through gas faster than if you were to drive the speed limit. Now, for me, I drive a hybrid, and it sometimes frustrates my wife because I'm only interested in being in the blue bar zone. And the blue bar zone, for anybody that has a hybrid, is basically where you're getting the maximum mileage, you know, greater than 60 miles per gallon when you're in that blue bar range. Mm-hmm. And so my car, my current car, is rated to get 45 miles per gallon because at the time that was one of the best miles per gallon car that you could get. But over the lifetime of the last 34 months that I've owned the car, guess how many miles per gallon I'm getting?
I'm suspecting it's going to be close to that 60.
Yeah, it's
number.
Greater than 55 miles per gallon, even though the car is rated for 45 miles per gallon. And so the next car that I want to get is even a more advanced hybrid. It's the same car that my wife currently has because I influenced her to get a car that... So it gets the best gas mileage of any car out there, and it's a Hyundai. And that's rated to get 60-plus miles per gallon.
Wow.
And when I drive her car, I can get as close to 80 miles per gallon. And it's like, okay, so the body's the same way. If you know, I have a high performance sports car, I have a Porsche that you're aware of, and when I go to the track in a morning session, I blow through a whole tank of gas.
Uh-huh.
At lunchtime, we go get more gas, and then we come back in the afternoon session, we blow through a whole nother tank of gas. And it's like, okay, I can blow through a tank of gas in 2 hours. When I drive on the highway doing the same car and driving the speed limit, okay, that will last me, you know, over 450 miles. Okay, in my hybrid, I get over 800 miles to a tank of gas. And it's like, okay, well, if you abuse the car and you put too much pressure on the gas pedal, okay, you're going to blow mm-hmm. through the gas. Well, the same thing with your body. It's the same concept. If you lead a very high stressful life and you're using resources faster than you can replenish them, your body's going to get old and it's going to age faster and you're going to develop health problems.
You know, I've always had a hard time getting my mind around this concept of what energy actually is because there's so many ways to look at it. And you know, I mean, I know that you're talking about a rather simpler equation if you're talking about how much mileage you get from a car, but the energy in the human body is much more complex.
Well, it is, but it's a concept that people can relate to, because there are mornings that you wake up where you're tired, you need more sleep, or you worked hard over the weekend and you didn't recover the way that you would have liked to, and now you got to go back to work and do your normal job, and it's like, you know what, I don't necessarily have the energy that I think that I should have. So energy is defined in physics as the quantitative property that must be transferred to an object in order to perform work on or to heat the object. Energy is a conserved quantity. The law of conservation of energy states that energy can be converted in form but not created nor destroyed. And so the concept of energy, you practice Tai Chi and you're a mm-hmm. Tai Chi master and you teach people. And I remember when I was taking your class and you were talking about the importance of our posture. And I was holding a pose that was subtly off and you could knock me over just using the tip of your finger. And then you showed me how to hold the proper position, and then you could put your whole weight into me, and I wouldn't move at all. And it's the question of it doesn't take much if you're not in balance to throw the whole thing in the garbage, versus if you are in balance, then you sustain strength. And so the concept of energy and energy being in balance and energy flowing harmoniously is very important for all of us. And we've all had the experience where we walk into a room where two people just had an argument. You weren't there for it. You didn't even hear it. But what do you notice when you walk in the room?
But you can feel it.
You can feel. And you look at the two people and you're like, okay, what did I miss? What was going on? And neither one of them wants to talk about it. Like, okay, whatever. It's something that obviously I didn't need to be part of, but I'm now aware of the fact that there's some disharmony there. That's just the energy.
Okay. So with energy, can you increase your energy?
You can, and that has to do with what it is that you eat or drink, or do you conserve energy, or are you just blowing through energy? Again, let's go back to my little sports car. When I put the pedal to the metal, I'm blowing through gas really fast, and I'm going fast, and it's exciting, but at the end of the day, it's not the best fuel economy. Whereas when I drive more consciously, when I'm in my hybrid and I'm trying to get the best gas mileage possible, and I don't care if I'm on a two-lane highway and somebody wants me to go faster, good, you got a whole nother lane, go around me. I'm not, you know, it's like the TV commercial, you know, don't mess with my discount.
Uh-huh.
I don't get one of those discounts, but it's a competition that I have with myself when I'm driving. I want to see what kind of gas mileage can I get. And when I'm done with going from point A to point B, I get a summary on my dashboard that tells me how many miles per gallon I got in the last time that I drove the car. And if I'm less than 60 miles per gallon, I'm kind of frustrated. And I always like to see when I'm more than 60 miles per gallon. And the other day I drove from my office back to my house and I got 76 miles to the gallon. That excites me.
Uh-huh.
And so it's all about the energy and conserving the energy and knowing how to do that in your body. And as somebody that does Tai Chi, you know the importance of the energy flow. And if it's flowing right, then you're strong. And if it's not flowing right, then you're weak.
And you know, there's conserving energy, which you're talking about. But there's also, because people can get a false impression that they have energy. So there are things that people take. There are different drugs that can give you that feeling that you've got a lot more energy.
Mm-hmm.
But you're kind of burning yourself out pretty quickly if you're relying on that.
Well, yeah, all these energy drinks.
Right.
Oh, my God. What a stupid creation. What a ridiculousness. And it's interesting when a patient comes to me and I ask them about their day and I ask them about their energy and they're like, you know what, I need to pick me up in the morning, or I need to pick me up mid-morning, or I need to pick me up in the middle of the afternoon. And it's like, I go to seminars and it's funny when we go to the buffet and we eat and they have all these nice foods put out there and they have all these quick foods, etc. When we go back to the seminar,
mm-hmm.
and about 45 minutes into the afternoon session, the guy that's presenting or the girl that's presenting is looking at the audience, and the audience is in their after meal coma.
Dozing off, yes.
Dozing off, not paying attention. And it can be disheartening as a presenter when your audience is not getting what it is that you're trying to give them because of what they've done food-wise. And so when I go to the buffet to get whatever, I pick out very specific foods that's not going to cause me to fall asleep, you know, 45 minutes, an hour later while I'm trying to learn something, because mm-hmm. all the blood is in my stomach and no blood's in my brain. And it's you know, so we got to be mindful of that. But it's, you know, we can improve our energy, we can increase our energy, and we can there's all sorts of ways that we can affect our energy and be affected by our external world that impacts our energy. And it's just about being mindful and understanding what you're doing to yourself.
Mm-hmm. So is healing about affecting your energy? Is that what
healing
you
is a return to balance? And that will affect your energy. So when one is going through a healing process, they're restoring balance to their body. They're opening up the energy flow, and your energy will increase as your body improves healing-wise.
Mm-hmm.
My thought is if you just keep your body functioning in a very high, efficient way, then your energy will always be high. But it's also about, you know, taking the time to recycle that energy by getting quality sleep. You know, we got mm-hmm. over 70 million Americans who don't get quality sleep, who are taking toxic chemicals to force them to sleep. And it's like, okay, that in itself is going to affect how your system runs and affect your energy, and because it's suppressing your liver. And what's most important for people is that you want to have organic sleep. You want to have the ability to fall asleep, stay asleep, and wake up refreshed. And if you're not doing that, then there's things within your health that need to be addressed, and you should go to somebody that can help you address them. It's not hard to get somebody to be healthy. It's not even hard to keep somebody to being healthy. They just need to be aware of, well, what is that path versus what's the path to sickness?
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking about being healthy and keeping healthy, and I wanted to talk to you today about, you know, people who are planning to have a family. And what can somebody who's looking to have a family do to provide the best outcome for the future generation?
Well, we need to stop the profits over people mentality that we keep using to push our society. And you asked the question,
mm-hmm.
what about people who are planning to have a family? Okay, planning. That's the key word there. If you're planning to have a family, plan to have the family. If you want to get pregnant as a woman, if you want to help your spouse or your significant other become pregnant, then you have to improve your health, okay? We have a whole bunch of young couples who have difficulty conceiving, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they make it the woman's problem, but sometimes it's not the woman's problem. Sometimes
right.
it's a sperm motility problem because the man has dysfunctional sperm because the man isn't very healthy themselves. And, you know, they'll create all sorts of hormones and stuff for the woman. They'll retrieve eggs, they'll do artificial insemination and then artificial implantation and all of that kind of stuff. And there's technology and there's methods in which to do that. But here's my question. Why would anybody need to have that kind of intervention instead of getting pregnant the old-fashioned way, which God made pretty enjoyable for all of us?
It's right,
like, okay,
yes.
Why can't that have the desired outcome that God intended for it to have? Well, that's because of the things that we've done to ourselves, food-wise, health-wise. We're all dehydrated. We all eat crappy food. We all have weight management issues. And that because we have weight management issues, we have hormone problems. And because we have hormone problems, we have dysfunctional reproductive cycles, and we're suppressing those cycles with birth control pills and little gadgets and gizmos that we put inside a woman's uterus in order to make sure she doesn't get pregnant, and everything's about stopping pregnancy. And then we wonder why we've had a whole series of generations that's about not getting pregnant, and now we have the mentality and the reality of now people can't get pregnant. Well, if you've been focused on a particular task of not wanting people to get pregnant, well, good. You're going to stop them from ever getting pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
that's going to threaten our whole humanity.
Well, you know, you mentioned weight issues as having affecting your hormonal balance.
Right.
So because hormones are obviously very important if you want to have a family, you need to have your hormones in balance. That would seem to me be one of the reasons that people may
have a proper reproductive cycle,
right,
in which to have a viable egg be excreted by the ovaries. It's going to go into the fallopian tubes and into the uterus. And if you're going to inject proper functioning, good swimming sperm that's now going to find its way up into the uterus to fuse with that egg and now create life, okay, the mother needs to be healthy before she gets pregnant. So I ask my patients who are interested in becoming pregnant, please spend 6 months with me. Let me help you get healthy. And once we get you healthy, then you can get pregnant, and then you will have a healthy child, and then you won't be running to the pediatrician your whole life because your kid keeps getting sick because the environment in which that child grew up in, your womb, wasn't a healthy environment because you, the mother, wasn't healthy to begin with.
And we seem to have an increase in things like autism and stuff like that. Is that coming out of as a result of some of the health issues of the parents coming into the pregnancy?
There's that component. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's not the only component. It needs to be the perfect storm. Unfortunately, that perfect storm is becoming more perfect every single day. We have more kids being put on the autism spectrum than ever before. Okay. It's now, I believe, 1 in 38.
That's quite a few.
1 in 38. It used to be 1 in 6,000 before they increased the number of vaccines in the mid-80s. Now we're at 1 of every 38 children being born have some level of autism. Okay. And what is it that we're doing? Okay. We need to get better quality food. We need to get better health. We need to make sure that we have proper weight management. We need to make sure that we have proper hormone production. We need to make sure that the mother is healthy before she chooses to engage in sex meant for procreation as opposed to sex for pleasure. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that you can't do both.
Right.
But at the end of the day, we need to make sure, and it's not, again, it's not just the woman. Okay, men have dysfunction as well. I mean, we see all these advertisements for erectile dysfunction, okay? And it's like, all right, well, that's a hormone issue for the male, okay? So we need to make sure that the hormones are functioning properly, and the way that that works is by having a healthy digestive system and making sure that you're healthy and to begin with. So anytime a couple's interested in getting pregnant, I want to have a consultation with them, and I want to tell them, this is what your current health is, and this may be why you may be struggling to get pregnant, okay? Let me help you tweak some things. And I remember early on in my career, and I told mothers to be to change their vernacular, because I had a woman come running into my office one day in the middle of my reception area and say, "Dr. Huntoon, it's because of you I'm pregnant. I enabled her and her husband to conceive, and she's pregnant because of the work that I helped them foster, etc."
An important distinction for sure. Well, if somebody wants to get pregnant and they're looking, and you said a six month period of helping,
and they may not need 6 months, but at the end of the day, the average person that I meet, they've got some pretty interesting health imbalances, whether they're aware of them or not, and I want adequate opportunity to turn those around so that their health isn't a reason why they would have a difficult pregnancy.
So what are the kinds of things that somebody needs to do if they want to get pregnant?
The same things that you do when you're in kindergarten. Eat good food, mm-hmm. get exercise, get proper rest, you know, have balanced relationships, you know, get along with everybody. Mm-hmm. Again, I think I mentioned this this patient last week's show, and she hasn't called me yet to tell me that she gave birth, but she came in and she's full 38 weeks and she's got energy and she feels great and her baby seems to be doing well and everything is going beautifully. And, you know, she doesn't have any issues. She's still working. She has abundant energy. She's not morbidly obese on top of being pregnant and having all these aches and pains, this, that, and the other thing. And it's like, this is what pregnancy is supposed to be.
So, I mean, well, bottom line is that if you're healthy and if you take care of your health, then your pregnancy can then help you produce a healthy child.
If you're going to plan to get pregnant, then you should do the proper planning and you should understand, A, what's going to happen to you, what to mm-hmm. expect when you're expecting. I think that's a wonderful book everybody has read. If you're looking to get pregnant or if you're looking to have a child, etc. And there's a lot that goes into it. And all I'm saying is if you want to be a mother-to-be, okay, and your health isn't where you want it to be, okay, come have a consultation with me and let me help you understand the simple things that you can do to prepare your body to get pregnant. I've helped lots of couples conceive when their medical doctor says you're going to need to spend $60,000, $80,000, $100,000 in order for us to help you conceive a child. And I just shake my head. I'm just like, that's just ridiculous.
It's crazy, and it's not covered by your health insurance.
No, it's not, and that's the other thing. It's like, well, how important is it for you to have a family? Well, do you have 60 grand so that we can give you the opportunity to maybe you can conceive through artificial insemination?
Yeah. Well, this is an important conversation once again, Doc Rick, and I'm really glad to be having it with you. Before we go on, we need to take a short commercial break to hear from our generous sponsor, the AlternativeHealthcareNetwork.com. When we get back, I want to talk to you some more specifically about childhood health development.
Absolutely, but please listen to this commercial from our generous sponsor. You're listening to the AlternativeHealthcareNetwork.com.
You are listening to the Alternative Healthcare Network.
You've been going to the doctor for years. They order you blood work, give you a pill to cover up your symptom, and send you on your way. The side effects to that medication could not only be dangerous, but life-threatening, and what you don't know can kill you. I'm Dr. Richard Huntoon of the Advanced Alternative Medicine Center for all the latest on improving your health. I'm here to answer any questions in helping you towards a healthier life. Call Advanced Alternative Medicine Center at 561-2225 or go to spineboy.com.
You are listening to the Alternative Healthcare Network.
And we are back, and you're listening to When Your Health Matters, the show designed to empower you to better health through knowledge and education. And I'm your host, Dr. Richard Huntoon from Advanced Alternative Medicine Center, located at 138 Canal Street in Pooler Park. That is in Pooler, Georgia. We are in Suite 404 of Building 400. If you want to get a hold of me, the best way to do that, other than walk into my office, would be to call my cell phone directly at area code 845-561-2225. Again, 845-561-2225. Or you can email me directly at docrick@spineboy.com. Please do not text me because I do not receive texts, but email is a good way to get a hold of me. Again, docrick@spineboy.com. And today, Mark and I have been talking about, children, how to have a healthy pregnancy, how to make sure that you get pregnant, and how to start a family.
Well, what should a prospective parent do before trying to get pregnant?
Well, that's an interesting question. Realistically, you want to make sure that you get yourself healthy to begin with. Like I said, you want to clean up your health, and you want to be intentional with choosing to get pregnant, meaning that you want to focus on getting pregnant, and like I said, you want to clean up your health.
So are there particular foods that one would want to eat at that time?
You want to eat real food regularly and avoid all the crap food, the completely refined and processed foods. You want to eliminate sugar, and you want to get a handle on your microbiome to make sure that your digestive and intestinal system are working the way that they're supposed to, because they provide the nutrients to make sure that your hormones are functioning properly, to make sure that your organs are functioning properly. And if you want your uterus and your ovaries to be in sync so that you have the ability to conceive appropriately, then you want to make sure that your hormone levels are working properly. And again, that's from quality food and making sure your digestive system and your microbiome are balanced and working.
Is that as true for the father-to-be as it is for the mother?
Oh, absolutely. Because again, if you're making adequate amounts of sperm and strong, healthy sperm that isn't damaged or anything like that, the father-to-be needs to make sure that his diet is buttoned up and his hormones are working properly, and that he's exercising adequately and taking care of himself.
So, okay, so let's talk about now, once the baby has been born, and what's the best nutrition for a newborn?
Breast milk.
Period.
That's why God made it. I mean, realistically, yes, breast milk is, it's got the colostrum in it. It's got all the nutrients. And now that mom's diet has been cleaned up and she's eating healthy and she's exercising and doing all those things throughout her pregnancy, et cetera, then her breast milk is going to be adequate food. And at the end of the day, the conversation I had with one of my patients who's getting ready to give birth, if your schedule kind of gets in the way of you being able to breastfeed at the rate that the child wants to be fed, do your best to feed the child when the child is hungry, because that's what's that they're asking you for food, because they're asking for food. There's a whole stigma nowadays about breastfeeding and breastfeeding in public and all of this kind of stuff, and hospitals don't do a very good job of emphasizing the importance of breastfeeding. They'll give them a parting gift bag that has a bunch of different formulas within the bag itself. And sometimes new mothers don't ever end up breastfeeding. Here's my thought. Take a class on appropriate methodology of breastfeeding. If you can't breastfeed all the time, make sure that you're pumping your breasts and storing the milk so that the child has the best opportunity to get the food that is intended for that child to grow a healthy life, to grow a healthy immune system, to develop a proper microbiome, to develop just in a normal way as best as possible. Make sure that they're getting adequate amounts of breast milk. And my thought is don't even consider formulas, because you're going to make the kid obese, because those formulas aren't the same thing as mother's breast milk. And, you know, you're going to start your kid off behind the eight ball just because you didn't feed the kid right.
So would you ever need to supplement the breast milk?
There are times where you would need to supplement the breast milk, but the thing that you would like to do is give yourself the best opportunity to get your breast to produce the breast milk, keep them producing the breast milk, store the breast milk, whatever you have to do in order to make sure that your child's primary food is coming from breast milk, at least until they start to crack their teeth.
And if you were to need to supplement, what would you supplement with?
That's a really good question because I'll be honest with you, I haven't spent much time looking at artificial breast milks as of recent. That's probably something that I should do, but I've always emphasized with my patients, and I haven't had any issues with any of my patients who have heeded my advice, their breasts always produce adequate amounts of milk.
Now, you mentioned the cracking of their teeth and when their first teeth show up. Is that when you should start to introduce solid food?
That's where you want to consider moving in that direction, but that doesn't mean that, you know, kids are cracking teeth at younger and younger and younger ages nowadays, and it's you know, I've seen kids as little as 6 or 7 months old that have teeth, and it's just like, wow. I remember growing up as a kid, when I was a younger adult, that kids didn't have teeth at that age, and now they do have teeth at that age, and that's because our evolutionary process is speeding up. And at the end of the day, when they have teeth to help break down food. Start giving them, minced up vegetables. Do vegetables first.
Vegetables first,
yeah.
Not fruit.
Do fruit second. And try to avoid the grains.
Why is that?
You don't want to get them addicted to the grains. And we've seen over the years that, you know, there's a lot of gluten sensitivities out there, and you could promote a gluten sensitivity in your child, and then their digestive system starts to change, and then they start to have digestive issues, and it's not necessarily their fault.
So if they're starting on their solid food, at what point would you want to stop the breastfeeding?
Whenever the child chooses to stop. I think it's important for the mother and their new child to have adequate bonding time together. And if it's still important to the child, even if it's once every couple of days, okay, if it's still important to the child, then it's still important to the child. I don't think you should cut that off. I've known of a family that the child was still breastfeeding periodically at 3.5, 4 years old. And everybody was flabbergasted by that. And I understood the position of the parents, and I supported the position of the parents. If it's still a nurturing thing with regards to the mother and their child, maintaining that nurturance, I think, is important.
So that's not a problem.
But it's not a problem, but it's not very common. And you know what? As you're feeding the kid more solid foods, and as the kid's getting older and they're becoming a little toddler and they're 18 months old or they're 2 years old or what have you, them eating solid food is going to be sufficient for them. But if they, you know, after 18 months, if they're still breastfeeding, there's nothing wrong with that.
Now, you mentioned that there were the sequence of foods that should be introduced for the child. You know, the child's digestive system is developing. So what are there any other things that you should consider besides the sequence in which you introduce food?
Stay the heck away from the completely refined and processed sugars.
Mm-hmm.
Don't introduce anything that has crap sugar in it, because if you do, you're going to disrupt their microbiome, you're going to affect their immune system, and you're going to create a sickly kid.
Now, there's so many food allergies that seem to be becoming prominent in today's culture. Peanut allergies is probably one of the most well-known and problematic. Is there anything that a parent can do to deal with food allergies in their children?
Well, what's interesting and something that I realized early on in my career is women who, during their pregnancy, develop morning sickness. Morning sickness is the unborn child having an allergy to something that the mother's eating.
Huh.
If the mother comes to me with their morning sickness as a problem, we will figure out what the allergen is that the baby's being affected by, and we'll actually treat the mother-to-be, and we'll treat the baby, and then she'll no longer have morning sickness. Mm-hmm. And that's fascinating to see. It's fascinating for the mother to understand. And based upon that, then we start to have an understanding of what's going on within the child and what they may develop sensitivity-wise when they're first born, and then we can make sure that we head those things off so that they don't become a problem. But there's so many things in our society that are creating allergens. You mentioned peanuts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we have gluten sensitivities. We have dairy sensitivities, casein sensitivities, those kinds of things. And there are things I can do in the office to make those problems go away really quickly. But what's important is you want to give your kid the best opportunity to start digesting whole foods, so you got to make sure that you got good, high-quality whole foods resources. And if a child's developing allergies, that's because they already have a leaky gut within their digestive system, and we want to get in front of that as quickly as possible they don't, you know, develop all the ramifications of that.
I know another component of good health is proper exercise, and I'm sure exercise is important in a child's life. But most of what babies and young children need to do is just nothing more than their natural movements, from lying down and sitting and kneeling and crawling. Is there anything else that a parent should do to promote that?
Well, a parent should get involved with their child in exercise. So what I say is that the mother, after she's been given gave birth and had the child, she should use the child as part of an exercise routine. Okay, laying on her back and propping the kid up on her legs and doing leg exercises with the weight of the child. And as the child gets heavier, as the child gets bigger, then the resistance gets more, and then the mother gets to work out more using more resistance. Getting down on the ground with your kid and exercising with your kid and using your kid as part of the exercise, what do you think that's promoting within the kid?
Well, the desire to be part of that exercise.
The desire to be part of that exercise. Right. And then the kid starts to exercise themselves, and the kid becomes exercise conscious. And you're developing that consciousness within the child from the moment that they're born.
That, which is a great thing. Now, one of the critical things that I've read about is this idea of cross-body exercises, and that those are really important for developing the mind.
They're vitally important. Okay,
because
it helps to develop the right side of your brain and the left side of your brain and the interconnection between them, called the corpus callosum. Okay, and we do cross crawling, and so when a baby is sitting in their crib or in their little stroller or whatever, in their bassinet or what have you, and they're on their back, what do they typically do? They flail their arms and their legs up and down, and it's like, okay, what is the purpose of that? They're laying down neurological pathways that the left side of the brain controls the right side of the body, and the right side of the brain controls the left side of the body. And so there is that crossing pattern, and you want to make sure that you're developing those neurons and those nerves to reinforce that pattern. And so the kid's crawling while they're on their back in the air, okay?
Uh-huh.
And then they roll over, and they're able to push themselves up onto their hands and knees, and they're doing this back, and guess what they're doing? They're laying down the neurological systems, and then they start to crawl. And you want to promote your kid's ability to crawl for as long as possible. But guess what? Kids are trying to be advanced. They want to grow up quickly. They see that you're standing up, so now they want to stand up, okay? The longer you can keep your kids crawling, the healthier their brain development's going to be. If you as a parent are so interested in getting your kid to walk before they're ready to walk because you want to have one of these early developed kids, you may be interfering with their neurological pathways and their brain development. So let them crawl as long as they need to crawl. When they're ready to stand up and walk, they'll start to stand up and walk, but you shouldn't be the one that enforces that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's so interesting because, I understand that cross-body exercises like that are really critical for language development.
It's critical for the whole brain to develop, and language being one of those centers. And yeah, when you're laying down balanced, proper neurological pathways, then the coordination develops, the speech develops, the proper processing of information develops, and reinforcing all of that and making sure that's developing in a healthy, normal fashion is vitally important for the health and welfare of the child, both short-term and long-term.
And there are a lot of different exercises that emphasize that sort of cross-body patterning, like martial arts and gymnastics and swimming.
Swimming and running and climbing and all those things that require you to use both your upper body and your lower body synchronistically at the same time, repetitively for longer periods of time.
The other thing that I think exercise does is it really helps improve breathing. And so I know that we've talked some about breathing and the importance of breathing. Can you explain the impact of deeper breathing will have on a child's development?
Well, deeper breathing engages the diaphragm, and the diaphragm is how you process your emotions. And so deeper breathing and breathing heavy and exercising to the point where you're trying to bring more oxygen in and so that you can can coordinate your breathing properly and brain function, et cetera. All of that's important. It's all regulated by your diaphragm. And so proper breathing and belly breathing and deep breathing to really expand your lungs, expand your diaphragm, massage your digestive organs, all of that is going to promote better health, better balance, and better function.
Well, this has really been a great conversation on the early development years for a child. We need to take a short commercial break to hear from our generous sponsor, the AlternativeHealthcareNetwork.com. When we get back, I want to talk to you a little bit more about as the child is growing and what they need to do and what parents need to do to help their child.
Absolutely. But please listen to this commercial from our generous sponsor. You're listening to the AlternativeHealthcareNetwork.com.
You are listening to the Alternative Healthcare Network.
You've been going to the doctor for years. They order you blood work, give you a pill to cover up your symptom, and send you on your way. The side effects to that medication could not only be dangerous, but life-threatening, and what you don't know can kill you. I'm Dr. Richard Huntoon of the Advanced Alternative Medicine Center. For all the latest on improving your health, I'm here to answer any questions in helping you towards a healthier life. Call Advanced Alternative Medicine Center at 561-2225 or go to spineboy.com.
You are listening to the Alternative Healthcare Network.
And we are back, and you're listening to When Your Health Matters, the show designed to empower you to better health through knowledge and education. And I'm your host, Dr. Richard Huntoon from Advanced Alternative Medicine Center. We are located at 138 Canal Street in Pooler Park. That is in Pooler, Georgia. We're in Suite 404 of Building 400. If you have any questions or you want to get a hold of me, the best way to do that is to call my cell phone directly. My cell phone number is area code 845-561-2225. Again, 845-561-2225. Please do not text that phone, as it does not receive texts. It is a phone and it only receives phone calls. If you do want to text me to my email. My email is docrick@spineboy.com. That's docrick@spineboy.com. And it would be my pleasure to help you to better understanding what the concerns that you have or maybe your child-to-be has. Today, Mark and I have been talking about childhood health and development. And Mark, you have more questions.
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit more as we're talking about exercise in children. And in the early years, children have not developed the musculature or the endurance that adults have. So how different is exercise for children as compared to adults?
Well, it really isn't all that different. It's just, how much experience do you have laying down the pathway? It's interesting. My dad, who's 80 this year, has spent his whole life exercising. And so the neurological pathways are really, really strong within him because he's reinforced them with all the running that he's done, with all the weightlifting that he's done, with all the cycling that he's done, other competitive sports like tennis, et cetera. He was a physical fitness freak. He was an exercise physiologist. And so that's always been a point in his life. But at the end of the day, when did that start for him? It started at a very, very young age. And he's always been physically active and always was getting into things. He was what his mom called was a fuss budget because he couldn't sit still no matter what was going on. And that actually became his nickname was Budge. And, so it's what's the difference? The difference is your ability to manage the stress associated with exercising. You know, I remember as a little kid, we used to jump off high trees or we used to jump off high platforms and we would land on old mattresses and that kind of thing. And we would learn how to hit and roll at the same time so that we weren't really destroying ourselves. And I look back at my childhood and I say, I did some pretty stupid things growing up as a kid. But at the end of the day, being out there and being physically active within what you can manage for yourself, we certainly don't want to put a child in harm's way. I don't think putting a child in collision-based sports at such a young age is smart. I don't think we should have a thing called peewee football. Okay, I don't think children should be playing football until they're at least 15 years of age. Why? Because their bodies have then developed. If you're having kids having collisions as fast as those kids can run at such a young age with all sorts of pads and all sorts of really hard, firm plastic helmets, et cetera, and they run into each other. I remember when I was first in practice, I used to go down to the local high school's football team and watch the practices and make sure that nobody was developing what in the sports industry they call stingers, which is, you're a running back and you run into a pile of 10 other people in front of you and you hit the top of your head and you get lightning bolts down your arms and your hands. Not a good thing. Shouldn't be happening. Needs to be addressed immediately. Make sure that you're not creating a problem that's going to manifest in a neurological condition down the line. But at the end of the day, you know, if this is the star running back and they're getting stingers and they got a game against their arch rivals this weekend, coach doesn't want to hear about it. Coach wants to develop a game plan and put the kid in. And so sometimes coaches don't necessarily have their athletes the best interest because it's more the culture of winning, etc. And I think we need to do a better job of making sure that what we're doing with our kids is about protecting them and making sure that we're not setting themselves up for injuries. And, you know, we see just a couple weekends ago, we had the All-Star game and we had the home run hitting contest and all of that that went on. And, you know, we got all the kids in baseball that are making the All-Star team now are younger than age 27.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, so these kids are developing younger and younger and they're becoming men younger and younger. And, you know, the LeBron James and the Bryce Harpers and, you know, the Yankees just signed this kid who's 16 years old and he got a $5 million signing bonus. And, you know, they think he's going to be ready for the major leagues by the time he's 18. And it's like, you know, we put a lot of pressure on these kids and they're using their bodies and there are people who are born with these natural talents and they have the abilities to perform at a high rate of efficiency, et cetera. But we need to understand what are we dealing with, and we don't want to suppress their ability to enjoy the gift that they have, but we also don't necessarily want to push them along too fast to where, you know, the difference between semi-pro versus pro is the difference between dealing with teenagers versus dealing with full-grown men or full-grown women. And it's, you know, there's a lot of violence involved in various sports, even in sports that aren't meant to be violent. You know, you try to steal a base or slide into a base or slide into home or whatever. Sometimes there's some pretty severe collisions, or you're out there wanting to catch an outfield fly and you run into the wall because you're more concentrating on making the catch and not necessarily aware of where the wall is. And, you know, and so there's lots of stuff that goes on, and we need to be mindful of bringing along a child to where their body is physically developed enough to withstand the stress, and you're not subjecting them to that stress before their body's ready to handle it.
Yeah, and I mean, we're finding out more and more that even the adults are coming along with these long-term, life-altering brain injuries from some of these violent sports.
Yeah.
I would think that in the youngest ages, just the activities that the child wants to do are going to be pretty much enough, the crawling and the climbing and all that kind of stuff. Once you start to get into an area where you start to get some level of organization to the sports activities of the kids, maybe even at preschool level, are there some exercises that would be preferable to others?
Just anything that continues to reinforce the cross-crawling pattern, whether you're running, kicking a ball, you know, hitting a ball, anything that involves a lot of running is important. It's interesting because I remember one of my patients who used to officiate soccer, and he officiated soccer for these little kids, and they would just all, as a pack, they'd all run around trying to kick the ball, and instead of playing positions on different parts of the field, just the pack as a whole would be running around the field. And he said he had the most fun officiating that, just because it was just interesting to see all these kids. All they wanted to do was just kick the ball, and sometimes they'd miss the ball, sometimes they'd miss the ball and kick the other guy, sometimes they would kick themselves, sometimes, you know, and it's just like, just allow them to develop the coordination. When I was a kid growing up, we used to have a game called kickball.
Yep.
What was the object of the game?
It was kind of like baseball, right? With a big ball that you would kick, right?
And the object of the game was to kick the ball.
Right.
And if you kick the ball, then you were doing the game right. Well, if you got a little bit more competitive and a little bit older and you would be the pitcher who would roll the ball in, you would learn how to do spinners and that kind of stuff, and then it would squib off the side of your foot, and, you know, then there's three up, three down, change sides, this, and it became competitive. And then you lost the fun of the game, and sometimes the ball was never kicked, but yet it's still called kickball.
Right.
So if the object of the game is to kick the ball, then why don't you facilitate the opportunity to kick the ball? Like, we just had the home run hitting contest. Well, what's the object of the game. Hit as many home runs as you can.
As possible, yeah.
Yeah. So, good. Lay a ball in there that I'm allowed to be able to jack out of the yard kind of thing. And it's like, how many of those can I do? And, oh, now we got breaks within your time. And you know, they changed the rules this year. And it was a fascinating thing to watch and wonderful results. New York Mets guy won, which is probably the only thing the Mets will win this year. But, you know, it's just interesting. But you got to bring people along who are mature enough, whose body have developed enough, and everybody's body develops at different times. And I remember there were kids who developed really early, and I remember there's other people, I was one of them, to develop a little bit later. And I also remember in seventh grade going to wood shop where one of the kids in class had a full head of gray hair. Seventh grade. And I remember the teacher, Mr. Smelter, looking at this kid, and he says, "Do you worry a lot, son?" And I was just like, there's no way you just said that to him, you know? And it's so every child is different. Every patient is different. Every person is different. And there are those who are ready and there are those who aren't ready. And you need to be mindful of what they're ready for, what is appropriate for them, because you want to encourage them to get involved in sports. That's the best thing that we could ever do, is get involved in sports. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, some sports are appropriate, some sports aren't appropriate, depending upon how old the child is and what their physical development is like in their coordination.
And I think the big takeaway from this is really the need for that kind of activity, because we have gotten into a time in our culture where more and more people are spending more time indoors, less time outdoors. Cell phones have become the go-to method of entertainment for children.
Right. Tablets, those kinds of
all
things.
All kind of things.
And you're playing online games.
Right, but you're inactive, essentially. Right. And I'm sure you must be seeing postural problems from the whole notion of holding that cell phone and just always having your neck bent down looking at it.
Absolutely. And the sad part is we as a society have become so dependent upon our devices that we don't want to give them up. But it's interesting, I've shared this story before, but I was at a seminar once at a hotel, and I had to go back to my room to get something. And as I came back from my room, I had to walk through the main atrium of the hotel. And there was easily 250 kids between the ages of 11 and 15 in this atrium. Not a word, not one sound was being uttered, because they were all sitting on their little devices,
with their thumbs going,
next to each other, messaging back and forth without saying a word. And I remember walking through that whole group, and I was like, that was the most fascinating thing I've ever seen. Not one person in the room was talking. Now, when we grew up as kids, you walk into a room with 250 kids,
it's a crazy noise
factory. Absolutely noise galore. I remember being in my elementary school, which was right across the hallway from the principal's office. Our cafeteria was right across the hallway from the cafeteria office. I mean, from the principal's office. So we'd be in the cafeteria being loud as can be, because this is our time to eat and be free and all of that. And the right. principal would always come in every single day. And he would stand up on the stage, and he would sit there looking at his watch with his lip pulled out. And he would look at with a scowl on his face. And no matter how long it took for us to calm down, he would tell us how many seconds it took for us to get quiet, and he would tell us it was 15 seconds. It was 14 seconds too long. He expected all of us to just simply shut up and sit down and be quiet within a second, no matter what was going on. And it's like, you can't take a child who wants to engage in life, who wants to be excited, who wants to get loud, who wants to talk, who wants to laugh, who wants to play and just flail about. You can't expect them to sit down and be quiet when they've done that the whole day, and now this is their free time.
That's their free time.
And it's like, you know what? Go put Mr. Pagano in a soundproofed office so that he's not bothered by what all the kids are doing.
No, there's a need. There's a great need for freedom for kids, and for in order to grow up, that freedom is so important. Well, this has been a great conversation, Doc Rick. I know we're about out of time for today. I want to thank you. I think there's so much that we need to look at in terms of how we're bringing up our children and what we need to do to keep them healthy. And this is an important conversation.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't get into the whole social media thing, and that would be another conversation. Maybe we can do a show about that at one point, because there's been lots of issues with social media and bullying and all that kind of stuff. And we want to make sure that parents are aware of all that and how kids can avoid being bullied or being ostracized by their community because they don't have the newest gadget or gizmo or don't have the greatest clothes or they're not really comfortable with their body, so they may not have the best hygiene or what have you. And so there's lots of things that we can talk about. But I just want to thank everybody for tuning in. If you're a parent, parent-to-be, if you're going to be raising a healthy child, if you need help raising a healthy child or some advice on what's the better way to raise a child and let them be healthy and have better opportunities than you, by all means, please give me a call. My best phone number is my cell phone, which is area code 845-561-2225. Again, 845-561-2225. I'm happy to talk to you on the phone. If you want to text me to my email. My email is docrick@spineboy.com. That's D-O-C-R-I-C-K @spineboy.com. It would be my pleasure to help you to better understanding with the concerns that you have. Again, thank you for tuning in. Tune back in next week. Same health time, same health station. This is Dr. Richard Huntoon from Advanced Alternative Medicine Center saying, I look forward to supporting you when your health matters.
What started out as a headache has become a pain in the butt.